It's time for another episode of Getting to Know You. For the month of October, our guest is everybody's favorite country lawyer, Clifford Wilson from Tennessee. You're in for a treat as we welcome our host, Susie B.
Welcome, everyone, to tonight's edition of Getting to Know You. And tonight, my guest is, well, you know him as the country lawyer, Cliff Wilson. Cliff, welcome.
Well, thank you, Miss Susie. Glad to be here.
We're going to start off with just general type questions. Where were you born and where did you grow up?
Well, I was born in Cock County, Tennessee, just across Short Mountain from Cosby, which was the epicenter of moonshine whiskey making back in the 40s. And we lived there in the called Bogart community until I was 8 years of age, at which point my father decided that poor little boys did not need to grow up in that kind of atmosphere because Thunder Road was every day and whiskey was predominant. He had a young, beautiful sister to be killed in a car wreck with a drunk driver, and he was anti-alcohol as anybody you ever met. So we moved off to Tellico Plains, Tennessee, where I live now, and the moonshine was not as prevalent, and it was a much more peaceful area to live in, and I've called Tellico Plains, Tennessee, home ever since.
Okay, and you do have brothers, or do you have a sister as well?
I have three brothers and then one baby sister. We've managed to spoil her rotten. She thinks she's supposed to get whatever she wants just because we gave it to her.
At what point was your vision problem discovered?
I was 4 years old. I remember it. I couldn't find an airplane that was flying overhead in the clouds. And in 1947, a low-flying airplane was unusual in our community. And I couldn't find it up in the sky. And then I also burst a balloon, and my mother told me to pick up the pieces, and I was having a hard time finding those in the grass. We had one of those real mowers that you pushed, and anything in the grass would plug it up, so you had to pick up everything you dropped. So they hauled me off over to North Carolina to Asheville to a German lady who was an ophthalmologist, and she diagnosed me with RP at age four. Explained to them that I would never be able to read and that I would have to go to the Tennessee School for the Blind to get an education. And I had useful vision at that time. I did not have 20/20. I could not read or anything like that, but I could see the mountains. I know what blue sky is and green grass and long-legged blondes.
Long-legged blondes. It's amazing to me how guys can see nothing except the good-looking legs of girls. Okay, so you found out that you were going to have to go to the school for the blind, and how old were you when you went to the school for the blind?
I was 5 years of age, and five and a half, I guess you'd say, because my birthday's in January, and didn't start school in September after I was five in January. And I was told that I would be going home on the bus. I was looking forward to going back home because my family, I was really close to my family. And it was a sad time being separated from them. And every time a city bus would go by our school there, I thought I just missed the bus going home. You know, I didn't know the difference between a Greyhound and a city bus. So they had a time of me for about 4 months there. I think I cried about every day.
There were a lot of different sounds there as well, weren't there? You heard angels singing?
Well, yeah, I witnessed the end of time. When I was a kid, I was paying attention. These preachers in our churches would tell about the end of time. It'd be angels singing on high, and you know, we'd all be swept up into heaven. And our old music in our church. It had an old out-of-tune piano, and a joyful noise was probably a little bit optimistic if you had categorized it. Anyway, I was over there at the school about this time of the year. It started getting cool, and I was outside playing one night, and all of a sudden I heard these angels singing, and I thought, oh my gosh. I went running into the dormitory and telling the lady there that I was scared because I'd never be able to find my mother and dad up there in that mess of people in heaven. And she wanted to see what it was that I was so concerned about. So I went outside and she explained that, though, that was just those ladies in the choir singing high soprano and a pipe organ in the background. I never heard anything like that either. So my logic wasn't all that bad. It's just that I never had heard sopranos singing with an organ behind them before. So anyway, she assured me that the end of time had not come.
Also, you heard some other sounds that weren't frightening, but wasn't the school on the river? And what were some of the sounds that you heard from that?
Well, our school was right on the top of a bluff overlooking the Cumberland River, and right at the bottom of that cliff was a railroad track for the Tennessee Central Railroad, which back then had the steam engines coming and going on a regular basis. And on the river you had the steam boats with the Calliopes playing and people partying on those going up and down the river. And for a little boy growing up out in the country where we didn't even have electricity, I never slept in a room before where a building where you had a commode and running water. We didn't have any of those things in our home, so I was a big-eyed little kid. Everything was big, brand new to me. And of course, you had in Nashville at that time, you still had some of those old electric buses or what do you call those things. Anyway, had the overhead wiring running to them, and they were running up down the streets, and airplanes were up in the sky. I could remember seeing they would write messages with smoke, and all that was brand new to this little country boy.
Now, I think when you went to the originally went to school there, it's what most of us called later the old school, because the school was moved out to Donelson, I think, in the fall of 52. So you were in that crowd that moved out to Donelson. What was your impression of that, going from the Hermitage Avenue location out to Donelson?
Well, I don't know what to say there, because I was always in what they called the new school there at Hermitage Avenue. That was first three grades were there, and that's what I was in. So it was a fairly modern building, and the one at Donelson, of course, was much bigger and offered a lot more. Swimming pool and a really nice gym, and just much, much bigger facility and much nicer. So I was not unhappy with the facility. Now, some of the folks I was having to deal with as a dormitory supervisor, Miss Anderson was our supervisor in the little boys' dormitory, and she was not somebody you would cozy up to. She was all the time thinking that we were a bunch of rascals and all we were up to was no good. And that, so she sort of treated us like we were all criminals. Me and my buddy got tired of that, and we decided the best thing for us to do was just hike it off to Memphis real fast and go to his parents' home and tell them a sad story of how we were being mistreated and that they would take us in. So one morning we loaded up our suitcase with all our clothing and lit out for Memphis. And we only made it about, I don't know, 4 miles, I guess. You remember where Kroger's was. We were well past Kroger's before we were captured by the superintendent. They had the troopers out and everybody looking for us, but I lost track of a buddy. His name was Warren Buddy Townsend. I don't know whatever happened to him. If anybody knows about him, I'd like to find out, because we were good enough buddies, we thought we could survive on 5 bags of what was called cold cornbread back then, which is Fritos today. And we managed to save 35 cents. So between the two of us, we thought we had enough provisions to make our trip to Memphis.
Okay, in school, well, after you got back, what were some of your special interests in school? And I'm talking about things outside the classroom where you had reading and geography and all of those things.
Well, I liked everything to do with our phys ed. Swimming was something I enjoyed. Wrestling, I've got into wrestling at a fairly young age. Ran a track. I ran the distance running in a track. My coach was embarrassed by what I could do in the dashes. I was so slow. But once I, like an old truck, a big truck, once I got going, I could keep it going. So I did pretty good when it come to the distance running. Anything over a quarter mile, I could hold my own pretty well. But in a 50 or 100 yard dash, I was an embarrassment.
Can you remember anything that maybe happened in, say, from first grade to eighth grade that kind of stands out in your mind of something you really enjoyed? Or, well, I usually say something that was enjoyable or maybe something that was terribly embarrassing.
More embarrassment probably than anything else. My vision was going down slowly. And part of my problem was that when I would walk in a sunlit area and then walk into a building where it was darker, it took a while for my eyes to adjust. But I could still get around on my own pretty well. And one day I decided to go get my hair cut. So I go bouncing into the barber shop. I stood there long enough to get my eyes to adjust, I thought. Anyway, I spotted the empty chair and plopped down in that chair. The only problem was it wasn't an empty chair. The guy that was in there jumped up, took off like he had some serious ghost or something after him. And he lit out of that barber shop just as fast as he could go. And that barber, I thought he never quit laughing. He embarrassed the fool out of me, needless to say. Anyway, he got a good laugh out of it. I don't know if the guy ever came back to that barbershop or not. I don't know. I had no idea what he thought I was about.
Okay, I think you and some of your cohorts, one might be in here, you were quite a prankster in high school. Do you want to tell about one prank that you may have told? Because if I let you tell all of them, we'll be here a long time.
Well, we had a favorite teacher, Miss Northington. She was a sweetheart, a beautiful lady, and just kind-hearted she could be. And so we found a Jack Daniel's bottle down next to the highway one day. We got some vinegar and some water and put it in there to make it look like it was whiskey. Put the cork in it, and Ralph and I got the plan together that I would pretend like I was drinking out of that bottle in class. And when Miss Norrington was up throwing me out of class, that he was going to stand up and take her picture. And we pulled it off. She was not happy with me for drinking whiskey in her class. I can tell you, she was up waving those arms and about the time Ralph took her picture. And we both got marched off to the principal's office, and they tried to get the camera and get the film, but I think Ralph managed to save the film somehow or another. We ended up with that picture after all. Looking back, we ought not have done such a thing. She was such a sweet lady, but she figured out, I think, that it was a staged event after the fact, and also finally figured out that I did not actually have Jack Daniels in that bottle.
Speaking of alcoholic beverages, what about y'all's trip to Kentucky? Probably was a wrestling trip.
Oh, yeah. Well, Yeah, we were up there, and some of the boys went down and bought some beer. We were all going to get out behind one of the buildings there in the dark and have ourselves a drink. I never had tasted beer before, and I opened mine up and started drinking. I thought that was the awfulest taste of stuff I'd ever tasted in my life. So I turned around, and I was trying to pour mine out real quiet, like so nobody would know that I didn't drink my can. And I got caught pouring my beer out. So needless to say, they gave me a hard time about me being such a weenie because I couldn't take my beer. Nowadays, I changed my mind about some of that. It's a cold beer in the summertime. It's not bad.
Now, I know, of course, you've talked about sports, track, and wrestling. You were also involved in music as well. I know you were in chorus and band. What did you play there?
Well, I started off playing the snare drum, and then I moved up to the tuba. And then at the end, I was playing the sousaphone, the big old bass that you sort of wear as you play the thing. I think that my senior year, they had one complaint about our band when we went to the contest, the state contest. And they said that the bass section was too loud, and I was it.
When you graduated, then you were off to college, and you went to...
I went to Tennessee Tech for undergraduate work, and in all honesty, a lot of what I had at Tech was just a review of what I'd already learned in high school. Our biology and ag coach teacher, Mr. Hastings, was one heck of a good teacher. And he really took an interest in all of us. And I learned more biology, genetics, and that sort of thing in the two classes, agriculture class and the biology class, than I needed in college. In fact, I got so embarrassed in the biology class in college why he'd ask a question and I'd have the answer. And he got to the point, he asked the whole class a question. He said, "Oh, Clifford, don't answer it yet." And then he'd wait a minute or two, nobody had the answer. He'd, "Okay, Clifford, now you can tell us what the answer is." I finally went up to Mr. Harrison and I said, "You know what, I'd like to have some friends. I don't think... what we're doing here is going to make me any friends." So he quit calling on me all the time for answers. But it really was just a review of what I'd already studied in high school. So I sort of coasted through undergraduate work at Tennessee Tech at Cookeville, Tennessee.
Now, you didn't really plan on going into law when you went to Tech, did you?
No, I showed up with the idea that I was going to become a physicist. And I went in to see Dr. Bruce, who was head of the physics department, and he could tell I couldn't see good, because I'm sure I looked a bit odd. Anyway, he pulled out a slide rule and said, "Can you read this, young man?" And I said, "Well, no, I cannot." And he said, "Well, you know what, you can just forget being a physicist. If you can't read a slide rule, there's no way in the world you can become a physicist." So, I was a shy 19-year-old kid, and I thought he knew enough about the subject that he knew what he's talking about. So I thought, well, I've always been interested in government and law. I think I'll go and see what pre-law folks say. So I went to their area, told them I was there to sign up for pre-law. And they looked at me and said, "Well, now... we can't imagine why anybody in the world would hire a blind lawyer. That doesn't make any sense whatsoever. But if you want to come in here and take the course, we'll let you." So that was a better offer than what I had the other place. So that's the other road taken. I wish now, I have many times wished I would have bucked on Dr. Bruce and said, "I'm going to try physics anyway. I think I can do it." In fact, I did take 100-level courses in physics and made straight 100s for the three quarters I took them. So I'm often wondering how I would have done up into the harder 300 or 400 level courses. That might have been a bigger challenge than what I could have done, but I've often wondered about that because I do enjoy physics, science. I just absolutely love it.
Now, after tech, you went to law school here in Tennessee, correct?
Yes, ma'am. Video Elsewhere, Tennessee, dialogue. College of Law, Knoxville, and I still bleed orange. That was a much bigger step from high school to Tennessee Tech. Was pretty much a breeze. I had to study some, but not much. But going to law school, different story. There, I found out the hard way that you have one final exam each quarter. We had the quarter system back then, not the one we have now. And there was no prop quizzes or any other tests along the way. You had one final exam, and that was your entire grade. And right a week or so before finals, I was showing this little girl that I liked about how I could whittle. And of course, what I did was lay open that reading finger, which is the only one I had that would read Braille, cut it right across that reading part. And no studying of notes, no reviews whatsoever to take all those final exams. And I think I had two C's and two D's and was put on probation. I explained to the dean of law school what the problem was. He said, well, we'll let you come back in the summer and see how you do. And by then, I'd healed up and read Braille again. And I managed to get my grades up considerably. In fact, I was in the top third of the class with a C-plus average, believe it or not, at that time. I mean, our law school had several former military folks on staff. And the Vietnam War was raging at that time, and a lot of folks had graduate deferments. If they were in graduate school, they didn't have to go into the draft. So their idea was, boys, you're going to work for it. You're not going to be just lollygagging around here. And 60% of the incoming freshmen failed. It was not an easy time in law school because they were really making sure we all earned our keep.
After you graduated from law school, when and where did you begin practicing law?
Well, the county seat of the county where I live is Madisonville, Tennessee. And in order to pass the bar, I had to interview with the president of the local bar association and get a recommendation from him before they'd let me even take the bar exam. I met this gentleman, and I don't know why he was impressed enough with me that he offered me I guess it's about an 8x8 office space with an old desk in it, and offered me a great salary of $150 a month, guaranteed income. And that was better than nothing. So I took him up on the offer. And that lasted for about, I started practicing April 1st of 68. By July, he decided that we ought to be partners. So we stayed together then for 14 years. And in 1982, I noticed he was running for judge, reading that in the paper. So I thought it's time for me to go. And I went and found my own office, and we've been at a different location by myself since 1982. But it's been 53 years I've been practicing law, and gosh, I've about forgotten more people than I remember in that period of time. But I'm now representing grandchildren and great-grandchildren of people I represented back in 1968.
Now, there was an incident between April and July that probably kind of hurried up that offer of a partnership. Didn't you counter a judge's decision?
Yes. Judge McLuhan from up in Roane County was a criminal judge. I was hired by this fellow whose son had not showed up for a trial when he's supposed to. The dad had signed his bond, and as I say, the boy didn't show up. So Judge McLuhan sent the sheriff out to go sell the goods and property of this fellow to collect on that bond. And I did a little research and found that the rules required that before the judge could do that, he had to send out what's called a CIFA, or show cause order, to this fellow so that he could explain why his son didn't show up in court and whether or not he was responsible for that in any way. Well, anyway, I went up to try to tell Judge McLuhan about that rule, and he was having no part of it. All he wanted to tell me is how sorry and no count my client was and the whole bunch, and he was not about to look at what I had to say or listen to anything I said. Well, I came back and did a little more research and discovered that there was case law in Tennessee that said the Chancery Court could enjoin the sheriff and the clerk from following what the judge had ordered because he didn't follow the rules himself. So I filed that suit in Chancery Court and was successful. I got an order blocking the sheriff and the clerk from selling my client's property to try to cash in on that bond. And I think my soon-to-be partner was a little impressed by that. You don't see that kind of thing very often. I would think twice about that today. You know, I was bearding the lion in his den, so to speak. But I didn't have to go back before Judge McLuhan anymore. That's probably a good thing I didn't.
All right. You have been a lawyer for many years. You've also been a judge. Was that I guess that was a county judge. What kind of judge were you?
I was appointed a judge of two different cities at different times. The city of Hanover hired me to be their judge. In cities, the city fathers appoint city judges in our state, or at least they do here. And I was Hanover's city judge for a while. And then later on, I became the city judge for the town of Teleco Plains, where I live. And that got to be some interesting things there. I had one fellow one time come into the court telling me that the color of his skin is the reason I was going to hold against him. The problem, he didn't realize that I was blind. I had no earthly idea what color his skin was. And anyway, I guessed wrong. When somebody told me to guess what color he was, anyway, he didn't show back up in my court after that. I gave him an opportunity to get him a lawyer and come back in the court and do whatever. He didn't bother, but I got a kick out of the fact he thought I was discriminating against him on account of his color when I had no idea what it was.
You have also judged beauty contests, and I think you like the older girls with hands on, right?
Well, yeah, every June we had a contest up here for our fire department, and they asked me to. I did have to wear a white glove, but I checked out the competition to see which skin was the smoothest. And the older they were, the more points they scored. And but they had the absolutely have smooth skin, but I would check them out. One end or the other, and I would post my findings on with some of my friends on the internet, and some of the ladies who were offended by what I was saying got really ill with me. And only when I explained to them that it was the 54 Plymouth that won my contest did they finally figure out that I was talking about automobiles.
When I know that we didn't have computers, anyone for a long, long time, but you came to TRC once and stayed a week or so and got some computer training and what else. And I think I made kind of a real impression with you that week.
Yes. I had never taken any travel training at all. At the TSB, we didn't have any, except our, we had a coach that gave some teaching in that field. But I could see well enough, even through law school, to get around pretty well on my own with a few mistakes along the way. But for the most part, I was able to be very careful and had enough vision to travel without too much difficulty. Okay, your question was, do that again, Susie.
How did I make an impression on you?
Oh, yeah. Well, I got the travel training there at the rehab center where Susie was working at that time. And also I got introduced to computer programming, some of the programs that I needed to learn how to use so that I could do a computer on my own. And so one day we were going to lunch, and Susie said, come with me. So she was escorting me across campus. And all of a sudden, I heard this loud dinging sound. About the same time, my head hit something. And it turned out there was a metal light pole that I just about dented with my head, because Susie was escorting me. She said it was a total accident. That's what she said anyway. But I hit that thing dead center.
And it made an impression on your forehead, so you said.
It did. It did. Rattled my brain.
You were talking about when you lived in Cock County that the moonshine ran. But where you live now, there's something else that runs. Tell us about that. It's not moonshine, though.
Well, if you're talking about our spring, we sell water by the tank load from our spring on our property here. The fella comes and hauls it to his place and fills up bottles of bottled water for folks. The spring is really a unique in that it's bacteria-free. And also, on a dry summer, it's down to probably about 1 million gallons a day. On a wet season, when there's lots of rain, we get up close to 3 million gallons a day coming out of the spring. And we takes us 13 minutes to fill a tanker truck with water with the pumps we have. So if we had enough customers, I could quit doing what I'm doing for a living and kick back and just enjoy the fruits of our spring. But we don't have that many customers. We're breaking even, and that's about it. But if you ever drink Smoky Mountain spring water in the Athens, Tennessee, Knoxville area, you're drinking our water. It comes from our spring that he comes up with his tanker truck and fills up. Hauls it back to Athens, where his facility is. Is that what you're talking about, Susie?
That is. And isn't this spring water also pumped in your house, and that what you take showers and flush commodes with and the whole thing?
Yes, we frolic in this spring water. We wash our cars with bottled water. We bathe, we water the lawn with it, everything else, because we... With, 1 million to 3 million gallons a day, we don't miss a whole lot of what we use for ourselves. We also have water source heat pumps in our homes, which means our electric bill in the wintertime is much less than most folks. That water stays pretty well constant for 57 degrees year-round.
I know you have a lot of hobbies. You want to tell us about some of them?
Well, my wife bought me an electric bass 10 years ago, and I started messing around with that, playing with a couple of groups, and It's a little four-string bass, and my buddy that got me into that group ended up bringing me a five-string and then a five-string fretless, and actually he made me one from scratch. So now I'm playing a five-string electric bass with no frets and really loving it. I didn't dance for a lot of years because my vision was gone, and my vision really played out completely when I was about 32 years of age. The last thing I remember seeing was Yellowstone Lake out in Wyoming. But I was afraid to try to dance. I was afraid I'd step on people. A mutual friend of Larry Fain's and myself encouraged me to go listen to Larry play a dance hall, and did, and she said, let's go and dance. And I said, well, ma'am, you forget, I don't see. She said, well, I'll keep you out of the way. Don't worry, I won't let you run into anybody. So finally I got out there, and I don't mind telling you, I was scared to death. But it worked. She did keep me out of trouble. We didn't run into anybody. And then somebody else came up and said, how do you do that with that fella? And she said, well, you just give him a little nudge and he'll go the way you want him to. So I got started again with ballroom dancing, and that was about 17 years ago. And I've been doing it ever since. I absolutely love it. And I have several good friends who are dance partners who come and get me because I can't go get them when the dance starts. So we really enjoy that. I like fishing and hiking, and I enjoy just going to a mountain lake here called Calderwood Lake, which is just absolutely one of the most peaceful places you can imagine. And whether I'm fishing or just there listening to the waterfalls coming off into the lake, or just enjoying being outdoors, it's just a great place, and I enjoy that a lot as well, whether I'm fishing or not. And bicycling, I have a couple of tandem bikes. One is a Gary Fisher original mountain bike, a tandem, and it'll about climb a pine tree if you want to. It will really go up steep grades. I also have a quad cycle, which is four wheels. You sit two people side by side on a recumbent type style bike, and that one is a neat thing. You get a lot of attention when you ride that sucker, but it's not designed for mountains. You need flatter surfaces to operate it, but it's a lot of fun too. But I need to do more of those things. I need to exercise more than I am, because I'm a bit bigger around the middle than I used to be.
Well, I know that you have done quite a bit of traveling. Didn't you go to Alaska a few years ago on a fishing trip?
Yes. A buddy of mine organized a trip up there, and there was, four of us, I guess. We ran the cabin together and rented a boat. We had a guide who we got the boat and the guide for the price on the river we fished on. We went out deep sea fishing for, I'm trying to remember which one of the salmon it was, but we caught salmon out at sea. What time the whale was, the whales were trying to catch the same fish we were after, so they were running the fish off. But we went out halibut fishing as well, out further out inside of an active volcano that was smoking and carrying on. Alaska is a really neat place. I'd like to go back sometime. We enjoyed it. I did. And I came home with 50 pounds of fillets frozen. Up there, they're set up for that sort of thing. You can count a cooler full of frozen fillets as part of your luggage. Alaska does that just because they have a great demand for folks who want to bring home a whole lot of salmon. And I love salmon to this day. I eat it every week.
Well, some of us have been privy to some of the things that you have written, emails even, that you have written about trips that you have gone on. And you make everything come alive. You're an extremely good writer. And I asked you one time, had you ever thought about doing it? And you said, well, you needed to work. I can't remember how you put it. Anyway, you need to work at something that could be paid for, paid by, maybe when you retired. Do you have any plans to retire, maybe, and start writing?
Well, my wife keeps telling me I need to retire. And there's one problem I'm encountering right now that may force that. My ability to read Braille is seriously compromised. And I pinched my reading finger really badly one time, and it left a scar right in the area where you read. And also my playing of music, my playing my bass is sort of numbing that finger because you have to use it recording the bass. So I'm having a hard time, especially reading numbers and being sure of the numbers and that sort of thing. And if it gets to the point where I cannot read my Braille notes, I have an idea I'm going to have to hang it up and let somebody else proceed without me. I wouldn't mind writing. I enjoy writing a letter or two occasionally. And I started one time with writing a little, I guess you'd call it an autobiography, my early years, and sent it to my family, and they enjoyed it. But some of the things that I remember as a youngster, folks today would not know what to think about the way we lived back then. I've thought about that, and if I do retire, I'll have time to get in my old hobby of ham radio, which is another one I have followed. Still have my license, and not doing a lot of work with it though these days. But that would give me a chance to write some, and autobiography might probably be the way I'd go.
Well, I probably just about talked you out, but you have people in here are thinking, it's our time, it's our time. So is there anything that you would like to add? Because folks here want to ask you some questions.
Well, VIP Conduit is something I've been a part of just about since it began. I'm not on a whole lot these days, but I seem like I'm too busy writing emails or things like that, catching up on the local news. But I think it's a really nice program, and glad to be a part of it, and to help what little dab I can. All I'm saying on that subject is, folks, hang in there and enjoy this the site. This is, to me, it's amazing that we're able to do what we're doing here.
Okay, folks. Thanks, everyone, for coming. But now it's your time to ask questions. All I ask is that you just ask one question. And if you're keyed up and somebody else already has it, please let go of the key. Otherwise, Cliff won't have a chance to answer his questions. So it's yours.
Yes, you Cliff, you mentioned your wife. This is Pam from Kentucky, and you mentioned your wife, and I was curious as to how you and your wife met.
Okay, she applied for a job as a secretary. First year I was practicing law, and we got to know each other, and lo and behold, when I popped the question, eventually she said yes. I was surprised somewhat because she didn't know me by that point, but Yeah, we were married in November the 14th, 1970, so we've marked our 50th year last November 14th, and we're heading toward 51.
Smart lady. Congratulations.
Cliff, it's Parker. I was surprised to find out that you're a fellow sousaphone player.
Oh, so you're a blowhard too, is that right?
Oh, yeah, you sure, and you were right, you wear them, you don't carry them.
That's great. Super interview, Cliff. I remember you sending me an email talking about some of your biking trips, and I think you were also involved in some fundraising bike-a-thons or whatever they call them, but I think it'd be interesting to hear exactly how you managed that, and I have to encourage you to please try to find a time in the future to do some writing, because your writing is just great. I mean, just a simple email from Cliff convince you that you would love to read more of his writings. But I've known Cliff for a long time, even back on FTP, and even got to meet him when we had the FTP party. And he looks like a football player, girls, and he's a knockout.
Well, thank you very much, young lady, but that was a long time ago, and I'm afraid I'm... The football player is not what I look like now. I look more like a sumo wrestler.
Cliff, when my son and I came out and visited you at your home, we really enjoyed it. You got quite a homestead there. Could you tell the folks a little bit about your homestead and how it's laid out? And we enjoyed going to the pump house and all the little outbuildings you got there. I thought it was kind of neat where your family gathered together in your little, I guess it was kind of a enclosed meeting area. Almost like, I think it was all glassed in. I can't remember now, but give us a little information on the lay of the land there. Thought it was great. Really enjoyed ourselves. You and your first wife gave us quite a tour there on the golf cart.
Well, we enjoyed having you too, sir. We did. And we have 16 acres here. This is part of my dad. He had bought this farm. He and my grandfather bought the farm back in 51. And after they all passed away, we ended up splitting it up among the three brothers that live here. We have a nice mountain stream coming down through the property, along one edge, and actually comes through one little section, but it all forms the southern boundary of our property. And then the spring is located near that creek, a creek called Conasauga Creek. And our spring makes up a good third of that stream when it runs into it, because it's that much water. We have a really nice spring house now that it's shaped like an eight-sided building, and it does have windows all the way around. Terry, it does in that building, and the spring is right in the middle of it. It comes up under glass, you can see it, look down in on the water, and then it goes out through a stainless steel pipe out to the outside, and it makes a white water stream as it runs out into the creek. We have a nice upper meadow, I call it. It's like we got a hill in the middle of our property, and it goes up probably 50 feet higher than the rest of the property. And it has a nice little cleared meadow on top up there. Just a beautiful place to go up and be by yourself. My wife loves to go up there and walk and just be alone. Unfortunately, lately the wild hogs have discovered it and have been rooting it up and making it very difficult to keep it mowed proper. We we're having a serious problem with those feral hogs in our valley, and they're tearing up our lawn. They're just a nuisance. But our home is, we overlook the valley. And looking south, you can, on a clear day, you can, folks with good vision can see all the way to Georgia, which is about 40 miles away. This big Frog Mountain is in the distance. You can see it down there. And we have mountains all around us here. We're in a beautiful valley. Any of you ever been to Cage Cove in the Smoky Mountain National Park? I call where we live Cage Cove South, because it's set up very much the same. The mountains on all sides and a beautiful valley with nice big bottom lands where the creek comes through. So we thoroughly enjoy it here. I have no plans to leave. And we can fish in the creek once in a while if you want to. Go swimming in the creek. Did a lot of that when I was young. In fact, my mother had a rule it had to be 90 degrees before we could go swimming in the creek. And we were always praying for hot weather. But nowadays, I'm praying for not hot weather. I don't do too well with 90 degrees anymore.
You didn't tell about those bike-a-thons you went through.
Oh, yeah. We had a Turning Leaf bike-a-thon they had once. There's a group in Knoxville. That sighted captains, they call them, on the front end of bikes, and the blind folks on the back seat, and tandem bikes. And we rode from Knoxville to Oak Ridge through part of the restricted area up there, and then back to Knoxville, about 35 miles, raising money for, I'm not sure what it is, it's called a Turning Leaf. Event, and anyway, I'm glad to get to ride. They really have some fine folks on the front end of those bikes. We've ridden up the Tellico River, too, which is a whitewater stream, about 28 miles, and going up was a bit hard. But when we got to the top, turned around, and coming back down, now that was the easy part. I mean, you barely had to pedal at all. And most places you did not. You had to worry about the brakes being good. But that white water stream run alongside the road, just so neat, so nice, a joy to be out there.
Hey, this is Bernie. I heard you mention about your wife and all your property and everything, but do you have any family, children?
I have one son who's 42, two grandchildren, 19 and 14, and that's it. We no more. My son was a whoops. We didn't, my blindness can be hereditary, and we didn't want to take a chance on that, but he came along anyway, and he doesn't like to hear me say he's a whoops, but we're glad to have him, and his vision, thank goodness, is just fine. He has no signs of RP, and neither do my grandsons, so we're thankful for that. My son's, I guess he's on his third wife now. Finally, he's got a keeper, we think. She's a registered nurse at Children's Hospital and a very likable young lady. Somebody I've learned to like a whole lot.
No, that's good.
Cliff, are you an animal lover? It's Rod.
Well, we have a hound dog that adopted us, and we didn't ask him to come visit with us, but he just decided that I reckon our food was better than everybody else's or something, because he hangs around our place all the time now, and... He barks all night long, seems like, because when the hogs show up, he is not happy with them. He barks at them, and he doesn't fight with them too much, but I hear him barking an awful lot during the night. But now, one thing I can assure you, my wife and I agree on this, we're not having any animals in the house with us. Dogs, if we've got them, they're going to be outside pets. My wife has a real problem with a lot of dogs because she's a magnet for fleas. She can walk across a lawn or anywhere where there's any fleas, and I mean, they're going to jump on her right now and start biting on her. I don't know why it's that way, but something about her chemistry attracts those things. So for that reason, she's not keen on a lot of dogs. She likes our Samson. She likes him. I'd have him, but dogs in general, she doesn't like.
Well, Cliff, probably there would be more questions, but I can tell that your voice is tired. I just really, really want to thank you for allowing me to interview on Getting to Know You. And I have an idea that there will be other questions that people will want to ask later. But again, thank you so much. And thanks, everyone, for joining me for tonight's event.
This has been a presentation of VIP Conduit.